dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to another week of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and I'll be joined once again this week by my brother Matt, as well as Jeremy Ward. And first, I just want to look back to last week. I thought we had a great show, and as I look down the agenda, really have the potential to have every bit as good a show this week. I see some old news. I see some new news, and how the conversation of the numbers throughout the SVC and certain sports at the junior high and JV level have continued to generate not only feedback on that, but kind of generate some new topics as well. I want to let fans know to subscribe to the show. You can go on the DBK website. Simply look for the subscribe box, type your email address in there, and you'll get a confirmation email. Just simply respond to that, and then you always get notice every time we put a new show out. But beyond that, you can go Facebook, Shoutomatic, Twitter, SEO Preps, as we'll get to some this week, JJ Huddle, and in either other league forums. I know the TVC, and I know the Elite Sports that you'll find down there on the bottom of our homepage is also really involved in what we do as they promote, and we appreciate that. So, you know, Matt and Jeremy, as I look at feedback, it's been great. I know SEO Preps had a nice conversation we'll get to later in the show. Some face-to-face conversations I've had this week, even a conversation or two with some coaches. Tell us a little bit, Jeremy, as I welcome you to the show here, some of the feedback that you're getting and what type of feedback you really appreciate the most.
Well, honestly, I really appreciate any feedback we get about the show. I've had a couple great conversations regarding, you know, the podcast versus the website. And, you know, a lot of people really love the podcast, but there are still people that I talk to every now and again that just love the website and the accessibility. I talked to a couple people about that today at the youth volleyball games down at Southeastern. And it's just awesome that, you know, we can get people involved from, you know, third and fourth grade volleyball or football or whatever, all the way up through the high school ranks.
Well, Matt, you from a different perspective, I'm always amazed that you're coaching and working at a school really outside the side of Valley Conference. Yet, as you and I talk pretty much on a nightly basis, you're running into a lot of people that give you some feedback on our league as well. Share some of that with us.
Yeah, I mean, I think living here in Chillicothe and, you know, just when I'm out and about, I run into a lot of SVC folks. And just the other night ran into a guy who has a daughter that plays in our league and you know, is very, very active at his particular school. And, you know, he says to me, hey, every Tuesday morning, it's like clockwork, man. I can't wait to listen. And that makes you feel good that you're doing something that people enjoy listening to. And, you know, we try to offer opinions on here. We don't, like Jeremy said, we don't really necessarily care if you agree or disagree. Any feedback's good, you know. And we know when we have these discussions, everyone's going to have their opinion. And that's what makes it great. You know, if we got on here and just said, a bunch of niceties that everybody agreed with, that doesn't make it. We're trying to generate thought, you know, really, and some open-minded thought and some discussion. And so when we have people give us some feedback, I think that is I guess rewarding for us.
Well, guys, let's get right to it this week. Fans, we had another great phone call about fall sport that we'll get to later. But first, we look back to a discussion sparked by a pair of phone calls over the past 2 weeks. Several of our fans have jumped in the discussion this week, and some of the opinions may not settle well with some and could bring this discussion full circle. Stay with us, and I'll explain.
Yeah.
like the legend of the Phoenix. Well, guys, we know over the last 2 weeks, obviously the big topic has been generated from a couple of phone calls. 2 weeks ago, we had the parent asking about the numbers, junior high sports, JV sports, concern, what can we do for kind of a quick fix to get this going now. Then last week, we had a local coach call in with a really good idea, talked about the middle school grades combining to form a JV varsity and how maybe that could help teams put more complete teams on. And we had good side, bad side on that and a lot of feedback that we'll get to a little bit more detailed later. But Matt, I wanted to start with you. There was a fair unfair email, and it was talking to me about how we're possibly making a big deal of this. And it was talking about how kids have more to do nowadays and you know, maybe they play other sports year round or they don't or whatever, but it's kind of a double standard in a way where here we are wanting kids to work at sports and do things. But then whenever numbers go down, we kind of start to pick on it. They kind of say we're contradicting ourselves a little bit from a fair, unfair sense. How would you respond to that email?
Well, like I said, you know, we're trying to give people a reason to think a little bit and consider different things. And so the fact that this person disagrees with us doesn't bother me. So I'm not trying to jump to our defense here, but I do think it's unfair from this standpoint. Two things, really. One, I think there's a misunderstanding if this person thinks that we want kids to work on other sports to the point where they sacrifice playing sports in high school. In other words, I don't think we've ever suggested on this show that somebody should not play basketball because they just want to put all their time and effort into, you know, hitting for the spring baseball season or lifting for football, or, you know, I don't think we've ever suggested that, or at least I hope not, because, you know, that's really not what we're after. I think whenever we've talked about kids working at their craft, so to speak, you know, I think we're talking more about time management and just putting in the effort that's necessary, and don't use excuses about, well, I couldn't work at this because I was busy doing this. I think when most of us, when we make comments like that, like I didn't have time for this or I couldn't do this, we're probably, if we really examine, making excuses. We all do it sometimes, you know. I didn't have time to exercise today. Well, I did, but I didn't find time to exercise today, really, is probably what I should say. So, you know, I think sometimes kids use those as excuses of, well, I can't play this particular sport because I'm too busy working on this other sport. And we've never really suggested that. We think kids should manage their time and work at all. And we've all known great three-sport athletes that went on to play college in a certain sport, but in high school they were three-sport athletes and they found time to work at it. The other side of that is, why I say that's unfair is I don't think we're making a big deal out of what we originally started this conversation as. And I know that, you know, as we do sometimes, maybe we get off on a different tangent, you understand? But the original point on this was, is there a legitimate concern of numbers in high school sports? And I think there is.
Absolutely.
You know, when we have girls basketball in our league, having half the teams can't play four quarters, that's a legitimate concern. And so I don't think we're making too big a deal out of that. We have to figure out why we're losing kids in these sports and what can we do better to encourage. At the end of the day, these kids get 4 years of high school. And I personally think high school sports are a wonderful vehicle for learning things for life. You know, otherwise I wouldn't do what I do. You wouldn't do what you do. But when kids miss out on those opportunities to play high school sports, they're never getting those 4 years back. They're never going to spend those days with their friends again. And that's what I hate to see, and I don't think we're making too big a deal out of that.
Well, Jeremy, I know you have some strong opinions on this, and it obviously influences you and your kids and kids that you work with and things like that. What's some of your take on this?
Well, I agree with Matt. I think he did an excellent job of explaining, I think, our basic overall approach and concern with the issue. You know, one thing that we haven't talked a lot about, and we've hit on different reasons why, I think, but, you know, from my perspective as a parent, as a teacher around middle school, elementary, high school kids every single day, is, you know, it's kind of interesting to me that social media has taken the place of social interaction. And, you know, whether that has anything to do with sports, I know that's what a lot of parents want to blame. You know, their kids are stuck on their computers and this and that. But you know, to be honest, the social aspect of sports and what that offers you, like Matt's saying, in the future, to be successful in your relationships with people in the workforce, collegiately, you want to be involved. You want to look people in the eye. You want to be able to respect the person beside you. And those are the lessons that sports teach us. And, you know, that's the overall concern. You know, we don't want our numbers to dwindle in the marching band, in basketball, in whatever home economics clubs. We want kids to be involved in social groups because that promotes their likelihood for success as adults.
Yeah, I tell you what, some other feedback on this, guys, that I would really recommend to all SVC fans was on SEO Preps. And we had put something on there about could junior high numbers increase by going to middle school grades when we first introduced this. And there's a great conversation on there. WT9700 made a really interesting comment that I really wanted to talk to both of you guys about. It talked about that all-year player, that all – like your AAU basketball player, we'll say, for example, sometimes they get frustrated with their school because they get frustrated with kids who, and I'm sure we all can pick out athletes like this. If you have a kid that plays Legion baseball, they get a little frustrated that other kids at their school won't play it with them and dedicate themselves the same way. Or in basketball, they play AAU. And so what happens is when they come back to their school team, a lot of times they feel like they're a little bit mid-season form and other people aren't. Jeremy, how much in this discussion do you think that plays a role in terms of even peer-to-peer? Like if you have a kid that's playing AAU basketball, even right now, where maybe their friends or their future basketball teammates are playing volleyball, how much of do you think that plays a role in frustration and maybe kids not quite seeing eye to eye in terms of the common goal come winter?
Well, Shane, I've actually had the conversation with my own child regarding these types of situations. And I think sometimes there's stress that's involved between the athletes or just personal frustrations with the athlete, maybe not directed at, you know, like you said, with the other players or with the coach or anything else. But from the perspective that if it's not your number one sport or maybe the sport you put your extra time into or your summer time into, you still have to be trusted by your teammates that, you know, you do have a common goal, that you are out to win championships. And, you know, maybe you're a role player for this team and you might be the star or a starter in another sport, but you still have to provide your teammates with the trust that, you know, when they go out there with you and they go in between the lines and it counts, that they can count on you. And I think sometimes there is stress in those relationships and kids aren't quite sure if they're all on working towards the same goal.
Well, I love the terminology you use there when you describe that in terms of providing opportunity and things like that, because I guess it goes back to – this could go back as far as Little League. If I'm talking to a fourth or fifth or sixth grader who plays AAU or club volleyball, it could even go back to a high school kid that does or does not. But when it comes down to your Little League program, giving your – top 5-6 players a chance to play on those separate teams the way I wish little leagues would go back to, you're developing a lot more skill and a lot more situations. Even in high school, you may go out and play AAU and you may go out and do all those necessary things, but if you're not coming to open gym and working with your high school teammates, you're really hurting their development as well. Matt, what's some of the things that you see as a basketball coach that if you have some kids that are out hard on the AAU circuit, why is it so important for you to get them to a, you know, Wednesday afternoon weightlifting, even if it is the fall and you're not ready to hit your basketball season in full go yet?
Well, I think as a coach, you know, you have to, you know, I think you understand, you know, we've been through this more than teenage kids going through it right now. Obviously, you know, we've seen groups and groups of these kids roll through, but I think you have to understand that you're always going to have a variety of kids in terms of their commitment. You know, every team is made up of your quote unquote gym rats, your kids that work pretty hard at it, but maybe could work harder, and your kids that really don't work at it that much. And you just see them during the season. And those kids usually, if they're good enough, maybe can play a role for you possibly, depending on, you know, what kind of talent you have at that particular time. But he says, I think coaches understand it and deal with it probably a little bit better than the kids themselves, because I think what Jeremy's saying is true. You know, when you have somebody working really hard at it, maybe sometimes as a high school kid, you don't understand why your teammates aren't doing the same thing. Why can't they give the same commitment, you know? And but I think too, it's, again, talking about sports teaching valuable lessons, there's lessons to be learned there both ways. I think that that kid who does commit a lot of time to his or her craft, so to speak, and really works at it and goes the extra mile, you know, they have to understand that that's part of life, that not everybody's going to do that. You know, you're going to grow up and be a part of a team, whether it's at your workplace or in your church or wherever, and you're always going to, there's always going to be people that give more and people that give less, and you've got to find a way to work with those people. Does that make sense? I mean, you can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, every principal in the world probably wishes he had 75 teachers and a staff that show up an hour early and leave an hour late. We know that's not realistic. There are some that do, and some that give more effort. Maybe they are your better teachers, and there's some that don't. You know, but at the end of the day, we've got to find a way to work with each other, and I think that's where that leadership comes into play. I know you're not going to do everything I do, but can I get you to do this? Can you at least show up to this open gym? Let's work at this. Let's go. You know, that's where that leadership comes into play. So that's a very interesting topic. That could be a topic you really discuss for a long time.
Well, Jeremy, yeah, obviously we're not going to call kids or school by names, but as Matt's answering there, I'm starting to think of scenarios even in our league or things like that where you might have a group of kids that growing up through junior high was pretty successful, and then you may have a kid that's a basketball star, and you may have a kid that's a softball star, you may have a kid that's a track star, you may have a kid that, you know, is a cross country star, whatever it is. And as they get older and they do go their individual ways into their sport, they, all of those kids, because they're great athletes, had the ability to be solid role players that could have turned a sixth or seventh place team maybe into a league title contender. But as you see kids start to branch away and they kind of lose sight of, you know, still being a role player in those other sports, it kind of hurts the whole athletic program. Is that a fair comment? I mean, do you see what I'm talking about there at other schools?
It certainly does. And, you know, we've had that conversation as you look. And I think you could even look at some team sports where maybe overall you would consider the team very average or below average, but the majority of the athletes available to them are out there and working hard because they like each other and they want to be together because they've grown up together.
Right.
Sometimes in the bigger schools, you get away from that because you have different groups, different pockets of kids, and maybe it's not quite as cohesive as a group because they probably had multiple third and fourth grade teams, fifth and sixth, and so on and so forth. So maybe they didn't have the opportunities to bond. But I think that really is where the relationships and, as Matt said, the leadership. That's not something that the coach can necessarily do for you. At least I don't believe that. I believe that the kids have to develop that, and they have to want to follow each other, but they also have to want to lead each other.
Well, guys, I'll tell you what, next we move away from this discussion, but then again, do we? We take a phone call from a local coach, and as I listened, I started wondering if we have failed to look at another important aspect in our ongoing discussion. Well, guys, I tell you what, as the league continues to grow with different sports, I guess the one thing I started thinking this week, and I'm going to get to an outstanding phone call here in just a second, is the topic of all sports have off seasons. And if you think about it, you know, we're all varsity coaches and have been in multiple sports. If you are a varsity coach and you're doing it right, you not only commit yourself during the season, but in the off season, you're trying to give your kids opportunities to get better and put them in situations to make them individually as well as your team and your program better. And so that's just something I want us to think about as we get into this particular topic. In the first few shows this year, we talked about soccer. The discussion was about the growth of soccer and the possibility of it becoming a league sport. This week, we had some nice feedback from one of our area's most successful coaches. Take a listen.
This is Mark Williamson. I'm the girls soccer coach at Unionota High School. Calling in regards to his question as to whether or not soccer should be included as an SBC sport. I am all for that, with a condition or so based on the new programs. Currently, there are two established girls programs in the SBC, Zane Trace and Unionota. And, to play a round-robin schedule, which, are 16 games against, the other seven SBC teams, I think would be detrimental to Zane Trace and Unionota's programs. If we could initially, say, start out with play each SBC team one time and then still have, eight other games remaining so we could schedule a little more competition to prepare for the tournament, that would be great. And we have a lot of good coaching talent coming back into Chillicothe. Tyler Bryant, who is now the boys coach, graduated from college and went through Unionota. And Kendra Dalton, Zane Trace, standout girls soccer player, went to Liberty College, is now teaching at Unionota. She's also working with Southeastern's junior high program right now. So you're getting a lot of good kids coming back into the, to the area that's played soccer. And I think it's really time, if these programs, if they want to become a sport, you have some good coaching candidates out there that would, I think do a very good job. But, yes, to answer the question, I'm all for it. Again, it would be nice to have like a conditional thing put on the scheduling for Zane Trace and Unionota, at least starting out in the first couple of years and until the league progresses. And, to expand the sport is just, phenomenal. I'm all for it.
Well, what an outstanding phone call. Obviously, when we get any kind of feedback, we get excited about it and we want to get it involved in the show. When it comes from a local coach and it comes in such an intelligent feedback, it really makes for great discussion piece because, guys, as I look at soccer, I guess this is a great time to give a plug to one of our biggest sponsors with our show sponsor here, the Triple Crown Family Fun Center. When you go in there and you watch year round, the amount of kids from some of the elementary ages all the way up through high school playing soccer in there. And I know Coach not only puts time in with the Unionota, but he puts it in with, some of the travel teams and things like that of all ages. I guess, Matt, I'll start with you. As you hear some of the different feedback from where we had talked about soccer becoming a sport, obviously not just on the boys' side, but as the sport continues to grow, possibly with boys and girls, What did you like about the phone call, in terms of the on two ends, I guess. One, the sales pitch for soccer coming from a local coach, but two, some of the ideas on maybe how we kind of help soccer into the league by maybe the single round and then with the idea on down the road of going to the double round.
Yeah, I thought it was a great call. I looked up on the OHSA website, if the information I'm seeing on there is correct, the maximum number of contests in a season is only 16. So I don't think you would, if you had a soccer league, and it'd be interesting to see how other soccer leagues do it, I don't think you could have a double round to begin with. You know what I mean? I don't think you can ask, 14 of your, he said 16, but it'd be actually 14. You know what I mean? You'd play the seven teams twice. You can't ask for, your 14 of your 16 games to be league games, I don't think. Of course, right. I don't know how many. You may not have every team in the league wouldn't have a team going in. How many teams have soccer right now? Is it six?
Well, it on the girls' side, I think we only have two, maybe three that have all girls. I think now we have six, but some of those are playing the boys and girls together, just like Unionota and Zane Trace got started back when, late 80s, early 90s, I think it was. Kind of like that. So yeah, I think we still have
that in golf too, where, girls play on the guys' teams because sure. We don't have enough girls' teams to have a league. But yeah, I think what you would do is you would have to go single round, so you would play seven or however many league games that would be, five league games maybe or whatever. That's probably the way you would start it off, I think, and then kind of go from there. I mean, I suppose if you only had that many, you could play 10. It'd leave room for six non-leagues. All that could be debated, I think, and then worked out. Obviously, there's other leagues that have soccer that you could copy off of a little bit, you know, and kind of make some phone calls and see how they do it. But I do agree with him that it could help grow the sport. I mean, that's my biggest thing. I think as a coach, and it sounds like Coach Williamson, you know, really has his heart in the right place, so to speak, in terms of trying to grow the sport. Because I think as a coach, you have to look at big picture and not just what benefits you, you know. And I think that's what he was saying there is big picture. This is a good thing. You know, if you're a soccer person, right, you need it. You need it to be a league sport because that grows the sport, because now kids can make all league. They can win the league. They have something to play for. And that increases your numbers. I think that increases interest. There's obviously enough young kids playing soccer, like you said, at Triple Crown Sports, Triple Crown Family Fun Center. You always see it. You know, obviously there's a lot of other places, the YMCA and has leagues, and there's leagues in the city. I mean, there's leagues all over the place. So there's plenty of youth players, and there's got to be a reason why maybe they're not playing at the high school level, or some schools may just not be able to afford to have teams, things like that. But I think if you had a league, it would grow the sport. Kids would be interested. They'd want to do it. And I agree that as a coach, I think you want to see that.
Well, Jeremy, I want to throw it to you on this side of things. You know, when it's an interesting to me in the phone call when you have a program or a school that's maybe at a different level within a different sport, and how when you start to look to grow that across league-wide, how you may get some different opinions. For example, and I'm just going to throw this out there of – We've had a cross country or track debate before of, man, if they would be willing to have more than just the one SVC meet, you might get to know the kids and the matchups and things like that a little bit better. But if the truth be told, a lot of those more advanced level teams, they don't really want that because they want to be able to go out and run against the better competition to prepare themselves for the postseason. How do you balance all that along with what Matt's saying, where you want to be an ambassador for the sport? From an AD and a coach's perspective, how difficult a balance is that, and what's the key to that balance?
Well, I think that's a great point. And I know I've had conversations with people regarding, you know, especially this year with Zane Trace moving into Division II and in certain sports with the girls, is how do you compete at that higher level? And what they're talking about is, that, you know, from the standpoint of the tournament. And it certainly looks like, you know, you look at the success of the soccer programs, you look at the success of some of the more individualized sports where they have opportunities to play the bulk of their schedule against whatever competition they so choose. And if they're an elite program and they want to be an elite program, they can schedule that to their strengths, where maybe some of the other sports, the traditional team sports where they have a 14-game schedule, they don't have those opportunities. And does it hurt certain teams in the tournament? And you know, I've had a couple people, you know, involved with the programs and parents, you know, kind of getting those discussions. And, you know, it's hard to argue with the success of some of the cross country, some of the track, and some of the soccer programs who have been able to really load their schedules however they see fit to be successful in the postseason.
Well, Matt and Jeremy, I want to get your feedback here. Matt, I'll start with you. And maybe this is the most difficult question to answer, especially if we're going to answer it honestly. As I said before the phone call, whenever we start bringing different sports in, the one thing to think about is no sport has a quote unquote off season anymore. You know how coaches always give the sales pitch of, you know, you got to work at it. You obviously got to work on your skills. You got to keep yourself in shape. When we think of indoor soccer, when we think of softball players playing indoor in the winter, when we think of, you know, even the normal things that have always been there, club volleyball, AAU basketball, whatever it is, How much of a blame, and I don't know if blame's a fair word or not, but how much of a reason is all of what I'm talking about maybe a reason for numbers being so low?
Well, I don't know. I guess I hit on that a little bit. If I'm understanding you, Shane, I talked a little bit about that earlier, where I think people use it as a cop out sometimes. I think it can be done. I think kids can be involved in different things. I do believe you have to respect the in-season sport if you're making a commitment to play with your classmates and at your school. But I do think that, you know, time can be found to be involved in other things. And I think depending on, you know, what type of team you're on and the flexibility of the coaches and their beliefs, you know, I think there's ways to do it. So I don't know if I want to, you know, use that as a crutch, I guess, or an excuse for why the numbers are down.
Sure. Jeremy, a final comment on that before we move on this evening?
Yeah, I think one of the other crutches that people use, you know, Matt talks about the time, but the thing that I hear a lot of is money. You know, I spent such and such money on my club team or on my AAU team or on this, and it creates a little bit of animosity, and it creates a little more pressure on the kid. And you know as well as I do, a lot of times if there's only so much available, you know, financially for a family, and they throw all their eggs in that one basket, that does put a lot of pressure on the kid, and it does make it harder to say, well, I really like to play football, but I've spent all this time in basketball. I don't know if I can let my parents down. So I think sometimes the financial burden that's come with all this individualized coaching and Matt talked about with the OHSAA rules changing to kind of benefit that. But I think it's the amount of money invested by families for these extra out of school sports.
And Shane, I'll tell you one more thing here. I'll throw this in on this discussion about soccer becoming a league sport before we get off this topic. I think too, you have to really look at big picture as a league and as an ambassador of the sport. And you have to say, what do we want the sport to be years down the road? Right now, if a league started tomorrow, the programs like Uniota and Zane Trace, let's say in soccer, would be out ahead of the game a little bit because they've had soccer for so long.
Right.
But can you imagine if we would have taken the approach of in volleyball 25, 30 years, well, longer than that, 30, 35 years ago, where we would have said, let's not have a league. Let's just let the elite teams play who they want to play. You know what I mean? We would have right. taken that approach. We've got one of the best volleyball leagues in my around. I mean, we talk about it on the show all the time. It's competitive every year. A lot of games, a lot of tournaments of our league typically. And, you know, that it's become that because it had to start somewhere. You understand what I'm saying? Well, what if 25 years from now, every team in our league's loaded in soccer? We have a great soccer league, you know? So I think you have to look down the road too.
Well, and guys, as we move forward, I don't know how much we'll talk about this. We always go off of the feedback and things like that. But the one comment, I guess, I would say, taking us all the way back 2 weeks ago to the call, is we have tried pretty hard over the last 2 weeks to at least open discussion up for the quick fix, so to speak. But be it new sports, current sports, whatever, I had a conversation with a really good friend of mine over the weekend at a football game, and this guy – you know, has spent his whole life as a player, coach, and now involved in the Little League. And this is a school that I won't name here on the air, but it's a school that would be considered over the last 30 years one of the true basketball dynasty schools in Southeast Ohio. And he was talking to me about coaching some fifth, sixth grade or whatever, and he's talking to me about having trouble getting more than six, seven, eight kids on a travel team. And I just think that if that's the case at that particular school, that it's hard for us not to go full circle back to Little League. So that's just kind of a final thought on it and something that as we continue to get feedback, we'll continue to address it. But fans, I want to continue to let us know about the ongoing discussion, including all the different twists. But coming up next, this past Thursday and Friday allowed me to see some things in person for the first time. To be honest, I've had trouble deciding what I saw and need the fans to help me out. Well, Thursday night was my first look in person at the Westfall Lady Mustangs, and obviously to this point in the season, it's hard to argue the way they've rolled through the schedule, and they've done so with some great play at the net with Curry and Phillips, and I really think a big key is Wallace. I think a lot of times when you go through an injury like a year ago, a kid like Hannah Wallace was thrown into the mix, and she had to play the middle. And as the year went on, she was able to get better and better and better. Well, now that Curry's back in the picture, it gives you three pieces. Like Coach Rogers can move around a little bit, and it really makes their blocking schemes and some of their hitting and some of their attack really good. Tackett's been utilized in a little bit of a different role, great athlete, maybe statistically hurting her a little bit, but nonetheless, she's able to fill in athletically at a role. Williams and Arledge moved in some different things with Setter in the libero position and so forth. Now, with Westfall, I've heard Jeremy talk. He had a chance to see him before me. I was impressed. By no means do I want to come away saying I didn't think they were a good volleyball team, but I definitely came away seeing some different things that you could attack, seeing some different things that maybe are weaknesses, and I had a chance to talk to Coach Rogers about that, and we'll get to that here in just a second. But, Jeremy, I wanted to throw it to you first in terms of with Westfall – What do you see as some of the different weaknesses? How realistic is it to think that they can continue to go through this league at an undefeated clip?
What I've learned so much in regards to volleyball over the past few years is just how big a role emotion plays. Number one, being able to control your emotions and the roller coaster that can be, a five-setter. But also just the swing in the schedules. It just seems like everybody has one week of the season that's just brutal. And it's going to be interesting to see how Westfall deals with this, because they've built a lot of momentum. And now as they come into their difficult stretch, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the emotions, the highs and the lows. And, if they do slip up, are they going to be able to bounce back? Because they're not going to have a whole lot of time to think about it before they have another tough opponent coming to knock them out.
Well, after the four-set win over Huntington there, I had a chance to talk to the first-year head coach, Jess Rogers. Let's take a listen.
Well, Coach, another good win for you, especially anytime you come on the road in the SVC. It's my first time since the preview seeing you, just the way the schedule unfolded. And, obviously the first thing you notice when you see your team is the great size and the great play at the net. Talk to me just a little bit about the strength of your team there at the net.
At the net, we have Curry and we have Hannah Phillips, and they do great things for us. It's not only the size, but the skill. Hannah's just a sophomore, and I feel very fortunate to get the opportunity to work with her. She's very coachable. She's got tons of skill, not just setting and hitting, but passing everything. Curry works hard, hard hitter, and it's nice because she's up there so she can pull the blockers away from our middles and kind of open up other areas for us, and it just makes us a better hitting team.
Even with the undefeated start, I know you've been around such a high level of volleyball throughout your playing career and things like that. What are some things that maybe concern you moving forward? Because I know you know how good this league is. As you get into the second round and you're trying to chase this title down the stretch, what are some things that concern you you'd like to see your team get a little bit better at?
Well, it's hard when you have a team that doesn't have a lot of varsity playing experience. So, and they're high school girls, so they don't understand the pressure, and that's the hardest thing right now. We have a big target on our back. Everybody, wants not just beat us, but they want to, they want to beat other teams. This league is the toughest I've seen in a long time. You have five or six teams that are up at the top, and it could be anybody could win any game on any given night. And so it's getting them into that mindset that we've got to play our best game of volleyball every night, no matter what, no matter if we're on the road, if we're home, if it's Adina, Zane Trace, or Unyota Southeastern, anybody. We've got to bring everything that we've got every night, and that's hard, especially because the competition has never been this tough. and coming from all of the schools.
Well, last question before I let you get out of here real quick. I guess when I watch those top five teams that you're talking about, I see so many different variety of matchups, and it really truly does come down to matchups sometimes. Would it be a fair statement to say that the team that plays a little bit low, a little bit fast, knocks you out of system a little bit? And if so, what is it that you're trying to do to combat that a little bit?
Well, we go into every game with a game plan. Try to get prepared for their hard hitters, their defense, but at the same time trying to play our style of volleyball and not change everything. It is those teams that run the faster offenses that we want to focus on, that because you go from that one night to a completely different playing style the next. So it's a lot of an adjustment. It's not just you play the same style and practice that way every day. It's changing and fixing and moving people around. So that's a hard part about it too, is getting the girls prepared, night after night for all the different playing styles. But they always come to practice ready and willing to do whatever it takes. And if I have to put a double block up and that we haven't done that before, then they're willing to do it. They're just very coachable and very nice to work with.
Well, congratulations on a great start. I appreciate you joining me.
Thank you.
Again, that's first-year head coach Jess Rogers of the Lady Mustangs off to the undefeated start. And you know, Matt, I thought, as I was listening to the interview here this evening, I really thought of something that you and I kind of debated for years. And as a head coach, you had a unique opportunity to go through an undefeated regular season, which I know is a very special year to you, as it should be. But I remember you being the stubborn head coach that you are during that season, and you finally listened to your younger brother and realized something that you and I have talked over and over about as we've studied sports, that in order for you to truly be elite, obviously you want to throw your style, throw your will, I guess, if you will, on your opponent. But in order to truly win every night out, you do have to be able to play multiple styles. I know you agree with that at this point. Talk to our listeners a little bit about why.
Well, just for the record, I always hear you. I just don't always listen. But you do. I mean, I think that's probably the key to really being a great team is that, you want to be able to impose your will, like you say, on most people. But there are going to be nights you have to survive, so to speak, or where you just can't get the other team out of what they do, out of their, if it's in basketball, tempo or style, and in volleyball, maybe the style. You just have to find a way to survive those nights, and I think that makes your team really strong when you can, because that when you get to tournaments, you're going to run into that. So I think that you can draw from that, like, hey guys, remember when we had this game back in on such and such date? Remember what we had to do? We had to find a way to gut one up, so to speak, and get it done. So yeah, I definitely think that's big.
Well, Jeremy, let me throw a more specific SVC volleyball question your way. As we get into the second half later this week, you heard me ask the question. That final question was the one I was really intrigued by when I had the opportunity to sit down with Coach Rogers. You talk about the fast offense coming at West Falls' sides. Obviously, if you're going to just sit there and play at the net with them, you're probably going to lose more times than not. But if you look at a team like at Andina, the way they can play fast and get you out of system and serve tough, or maybe a Zane Trace, which has a little bit of a mixture. Obviously, Uniota, in my opinion, the most talented team in the league, can do a little bit of all that. What's some of the matchups that you're looking forward to as we hit the stretch run here? What should be a great second half?
Well, I'm sure Coach Rogers knew exactly what you were talking about when you asked that question, as she responded, knowing with Adina coming in and Adina, using one setter and having the ability to play a little quicker, that is going to be something that West Falls got to be ready for. And it is going to be interesting to see how that matchup goes, because Adina is, they're extremely undersized in comparison with West Fall. So you would think that West Fall would be able to dominate the net. But I'll even go back to the question, the conversation you just had with Matt. A lot of those adjustments are are really anchored by your defense. And I think sometimes you don't look at offense and defense as much in volleyball as particulars as it's ongoing. But having a strong and steady defense allows you to have bad nights, whether it's serving, whether it's, you know, maybe, you know, your hitting percentage is down a little bit. But that good, strong defense is what's going to keep you there night after night. And like she said, the ability to make adjustments. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. What kind of adjustments, you know, are they going to be able to make if teams combat them a different way the second time through, and a team like Adina that, you know, is going to have to be creative if they're going to be able to knock them off.
Well, it's a great discussion on the volleyball side. And as I said, I saw a couple things for the first time this weekend. I need fans to help me out. Fans, you can call 740-569-3254. Let us know your thoughts on SVC volleyball and what matchups we need to be talking more about in the second half. One night later, guys, I had a chance to go up to Zane Trace. Zane Trace football is a team that really intrigued me. Now, for whatever reason, I missed it last week. I did not realize that quarterback Tyler Henney of Zane Trace was hurt late in that Amanda game. So Joel Dunkel thrown into the signal caller position, and obviously a young kid, a good athlete, did a nice job. But obviously they take on a different look when you take out a senior. And yeah, I was pretty impressed with Zane Trace. McLean's obviously a team that's gone through our league 3-0 now. They beat Uniota 31-19, Adina 47-21. The other night they get out of Kinnickinnick with a 28-20 win. And a game, to be honest, Zane Trace had every opportunity to win. They jumped out 7-0. They jumped out 14-13, I want to say, in the second quarter. And they were able to run the football really well. Swackhammer and Mettler give them a couple different options. Pretty good up front. Probably the biggest weakness I saw was in the Zane Trace secondary. They were beaten on an 82-yard and a 98-yard, basically on the same play, where they got into a bad matchup. I heard Coach Peters later on the scoreboard show talk about an adjustment they made there. And in fairness to Zane Trace, I know Coach Peters isn't going to say this, but I had someone down at the fence tell me where I was standing that, you know, Henny even plays some defensive secondary. So I'm sure that, you know, in just a week time was something that they're still looking to fill in. Jeremy, I guess the first thing I would ask you, as a head coach, when you get an injury, when you come into the year and you have a senior quarterback, defensive backfield, whatever sport it might be, you could make the correlation, and the injury happens all of a sudden, and you basically have just a few practices to get it right, what are some of the challenges, not only as a coach, but really your entire team's going to face?
Well, you know, there's challenges from the mentality of your players, especially if it's a leadership type position. You know, whether it's just the fact that they're one of your senior leaders, or whether it is truly the key position, your quarterback, you know, point guard, whatever it might be, you've got to mentally handle that first, and you have to model that as a coach that, you know, so the kids still have trust in you and they don't get down on themselves or really start doubting the successes they can have without that player there, and make it more of a rally around them. And you want those players to still be involved to your team makeup, whether they can physically play or not. And if you have that strong you know, cohesion as a group, I think you can overcome that. But as a coach, you very rarely sit down in the preseason, start writing out your lineups and putting together your game plans and do a lot of plan B, plan C, plan D if so-and-so gets hurt, so-and-so gets hurt, and that, and so on and so forth. You really are looking at what you can do with your best out there. But especially in the sport of football, you know you're going to have injuries, and you're probably going to have key injuries. And, you know, the great teams are the ones that can overcome that. But I think it really starts with the attitude from the coaching staff and the kids and their ability to stay together.
Matt, in the three non-league games for the SVC, I know you've had a chance to see Uniota and Piketon in person. You know, my take on Uniota is I love some of the athletes they have at the skill positions. I think they're kids that are going to get better as the year goes on. I think it's probably fair to say they're slightly better than a year ago. Obviously, with Piketon, they're not as good as they were a year ago, but still with a pretty solid non-league schedule, them being at 0-3, I thought they might be 1-2, but nonetheless, they definitely have some individuals officials that could cause some problems as they get into league play. What's your take on the Uniota Piketon team and just the overall feel that you get from the SVC, obviously going through a pretty tough 3 weeks of play here?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's kind of hard right now to judge some of these teams because they've played a pretty tough non-league. You can throw Westfall in that mix, obviously, too, with the non-league they've played. But, I think you kind of hit it on the head, really. I mean, Piketon is just dealing with a lot of inexperience, and you know, you would like to think from that standpoint they're going to get better as the year goes. I think Coach Gallion does a nice job over there, and you know, those kids, you know, will get some games under their belts and do and start to do better. And, you know, I think Uniota has some pieces in place. They have some athletes. They've had a little stability there now in their coaching staff for a couple years, and I think the system is kind of in place. And you know, they go on the road the other night and beat an Alexander team that quite honestly has been pretty good the last few years, and that's a tough road trip to take. It's a long trip. So that's a good win for them, and I think that you'll see Uniota compete pretty well, because like you said, I think they are better than they were a year ago. So on a given night, they're definitely a team that you'll have to pay attention to.
Well, Jeremy, I'll ask you the same thing before we move on here. I guess I start looking through these schedules. I see Piketon. Yeah, probably most teams in the league would at best go 1-2, maybe 2-1 against their schedule. Westfall, Zane Trace, you could argue that very few teams would win a game against when you start looking at Logan Elm, Amanda, Taze Valley, Circleville, and even, you know, the McLean team at 3-0 beating three SVC teams. So what's some of your take as you study the scores and you look forward to league play? What's some of the things that are jumping out at you as things we need to be watching?
Well, we certainly have almost as many questions as we started out with before anybody played a game. I truly feel like, you know, you want to believe in some of the teams that have had successes, but you don't want to put too much pressure on those kids when there's so many newcomers at Westfall, at Piketon. But I really look for things to be competitive. This week is going to be a very interesting week in sorting things out, and I think we'll have a better idea of, you know, the true identity of some of our teams when we talk next week. But I'm really interested to see how Uniota, how Piketon, how Zane Trace, and Westfall, you know, how are they going to react now that the league is come. And you know, the execution is going to be better after 3 weeks. The penalties should decrease. I noticed a big difference in that in talking to some people from the games. So now that some continuity's there, I really look for, you know, more competitive football and better football.
Well, guys, this week's rapid fire questioning has some volleyball and football, as well as some other things SVC. Obviously, I am talking about our 2-minute drill. You guys know the drill. Jeremy will lead, Matt in the middle, and I will finish. So let's go to the hurry up offense.
How much of a role has the parity in golf and volleyball played in the increased following of these two SVC sports?
I think parity increases attendance and overall public discussion. I think that's proven time and time again. Just the fact in golf, with Uniota dominating for so long and Adina dominating in volleyball for so long, when other schools get to stick their nose in the conversation, people really get excited. So I tell you what, when I talk to people outside of the area, they're just amazed at not only the fan support of secondary sports that, you know, as most consider outside football and basketball, but the media coverage that the SVC gets in these sports. And you know, I think they're jealous, and that says a lot about not about our kids, but it also says a lot about our fan base.
Yeah, I think the parity definitely helps. And Jeremy touched right there on what I was going to say, which is just the overall media attention that they get. And, you know, not to toot our own horn, but I'd like to think that, you know, SVC Sports Zone plays a role in that, because we do some things for volleyball and golf that some of the other media outlets don't do. And I think that helps grow the sport, too.
Well, guys, a lot of questions come from the inbox. This particular one I actually put on the agenda myself just because of someone who works so many hours on the website. I just was kind of curious. I guess you always are making a guess, but if I'm guessing here, I'd have to say the parity would be a lot of the reason. More teams, more interest. For the longest time, we used to think on the website that, hey, if a football team is going to the playoffs or whatever, we'll try to give them some extra coverage. And that's not to say we wouldn't, but what we would find, the numbers weren't nearly as big for something like that, because I think what happens is if one football team makes the playoffs, the other seven schools are moving on to basketball. Where what happens in this situation is there's so many teams in the mix in golf and volleyball that obviously throughout the entire year, when you look at a Southeastern, Paint Valley, even in golf, had kids in the Player of the Year race. Well, Uniota, Dina, Pike, and even a Zane Trace, they're in the team mix. Westfall girls are tremendous. The Irvin girl from Huntington will be in the tournament mix. So everybody has someone involved in these sports. So I just think that the parity has a lot to do with it.
The football history page tells us it's near impossible to win an outright title without winning a golden football. Will this year's winner be golden, still outright with one loss, or are we looking at a shared title?
Well, it certainly appears right now that it's very likely to be golden. I mean, Paint Valley has had a tremendous amount, built a tremendous amount of momentum headed into the SVC play. If I had to guess right now, I would say that it's very likely that the winner is Golden.
Well, I'm sure that Coach Holland will appreciate us putting the pressure on him, but I think that Jeremy's right. I think Paint Valley, certainly has the ability to run the table. But if there ever was a year that you could possibly lose one and still win it outright, this might be it. Because I think that if a team, whatever team knocks off the first place team at that time, there's enough parity, I think, amongst some of the middle of the pack teams that they could get beat on another night. So I do think that if there was ever a year that it could happen, this might be it.
Well, guys, if you go to the SVC football history page, and you get there by going to the normal football scoreboard page and look toward the top, and you'll see a chance to go back and look at the history. Since about 1977, I want to say it is when they started going to the seven-game format, and there's been 27 gold balls, and I believe there's been 11 straight. We've had a couple examples where at 6-1, I think three times in history at 6-1, you can win an outright title. So it's obviously very difficult. I agree, homer pick or not. Obviously, those Paint Valley kids mean a lot to me because I coach so many of them in baseball and I've had them all in class. But I agree that as I study the schedule and the way and the order they're going to play these teams and some of the other different things that's happened to some of the other better teams in the league, I think Paint Valley does have an inside track to a 10-0 season. But I do see enough parity there that there's going to be three, four capable teams of getting them on a given night. So although on paper it might look like that, I would say that there's definitely going to be some difficult obstacles in their way.
On last week's show, Matt talked about the unique format of the TVC in terms of playing all levels of volleyball on the same night at the same spot. An email this week wants to know, is this a good idea for the SVC?
Well, my personal opinion would be that it would not be good. I love seeing the junior high athletes at the varsity contest, and as a varsity coach, I would not want to take that element away.
Yeah, I would probably tend to agree for this particular league, because I think the travel in the SVC, again, isn't great for a lot of schools. A lot of nights, I mean, you'll have a couple trips that might be a little bit longer, but the travel that we deal with in our league down there is a lot greater, and that's the reason they went to that, to save on busing and stuff. I guess I would have to look at it for a financial answer. I'd have to look at the financial reports. Are you losing gate? Those types of things. But regardless of that, I do agree with Jeremy. It's nice to, in terms of growing your program, to allow the junior high kids to see it. And if they're playing on the same night, they can't do that.
I absolutely hate the idea. I think it would be a terrible idea. We just talked in the first question about the parity and the following, and Jeremy made such intelligent comments about the community involvement and media coverage and things like that. I agree. I want to see those kids at the varsity game. I want to see those parents at both. You know, at so many of our SVC schools, it's nothing to see the parents at their junior high games on Monday, Wednesday, and following the varsity Tuesday, Thursday, and media coverage the same way. You even see high school kids over watching the junior high. I think that's important. So I just hate the idea. I understand financially in a conference like the TVC. Having coached 1 year in the TVC, I understand those bus trips are crazy. But in the SVC, it's not really needed. And I think beyond that, it's just a terrible idea.
Which of the final three rounds are you most looking forward to in the SVC Golf League race? And how do you think it will impact the individual and team races?
Well, I tell you what, the last round is the one that's going to be intriguing, as things have went back and forth. And there was a little bit of drama this week and that swung the match by two strokes. And I tell you what, I think it's coming down to the last match to crown the champion.
Yeah, I agree. I think that last match at Pickaway is the one that's going to come down to. And really, you know, there's two matches played in that day. And I think that 18-hole round of golf, I mean, let's face it, golf was never meant to be played till halftime, you know, like we do throughout the rest of the league. I mean, it's an 18-hole sport. So I think that 18-hole round to end the whole thing is really intriguing, because if a kid plays well in on the front nine, if he's feeling it that day, there's a good chance he carries that over and does it on the back. So that does play a role, that those two 9-hole rounds are played on the same day.
Well, guys, I certainly don't want to take anything away from the JC's realm, because you look from a team aspect, Uniota has the ability maybe to playing on their home course to get enough of a cushion to where they would almost be uncatchable on that final day. But assuming that the league continues through the JC's realm, both individually and team, I would specifically go to the back nine at Pickaway Country Club, because I think of that back nine, there's two extremely tough par threes. Both par fives, when you start to talk about the player of the year race with such long hitters and Thompson and Calvin and McKee, you can make eagle, you can make double bogey. Both of those par fives kind of set up in that way. And then the 18th hole, as a finishing hole, is crazy tough, especially if you haven't had a chance to get there with the number of practice rounds and figure out what to do off the tee and those sorts of things. So team-wise, obviously, no matter where they play, there's a parity 1 through 4 or 5 that sees that we can have a crazy order to swing the standings. But really, in the player of the year race, is if we're talking about something that's only going to be separated by one or two shots, it really could come down to just one or two bad swings on the back nine there at Pickaway. Fans, make sure you check out Shout-O-Matic as well as Facebook, Twitter. You'll get all the updates you need throughout the week. We do our best to get those out from the games. I appreciate all the people, Chris Riley, Craig Kearns, Eric Cox, of course you, Jeremy, other people helping me get those updates at games, and I try to get those out to Shout-O-Matic so all of our fans know around the league what's going on. Well, guys, we're up against the clock a little bit, but as we always like to do, we want to take a final look into the inbox, and there's a really long email, but I thought it was such a good one, I hated to cut it out of the show here, so I want to go ahead and get it in. I'll kind of summarize and then ask you guys. It says, taking your school, in quotes, out of the question, which school do you like visiting the most, be it football, basketball, volleyball, and some of their factors, where in this long email was a concession and facilities and parking, fan-friendly, etc. You know, Jeremy, you've obviously get around to all the schools quite a bit. What's some of the schools from a facility standpoint or just a fan friendly that you enjoy visiting?
Well, I'll tell you my two favorite, and they're kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, but my two favorite are Southeastern and Paint Valley. I just love the drive out to Paint Valley, especially in the fall. I just think it's gorgeous, the scenery. I really like the concession stand at Paint Valley as well. I like the fact that the older gym is a little tighter, and even for volleyball, it makes it feel better, even if there aren't that many people. But I absolutely love Southeastern, just from an overall standpoint.
the accessibility, I think the people there are wonderful, and they do a great job of, regardless friend or foe, it just seems like that atmosphere that's created there is one of the best.
Matt, what's your take here?
Well, I don't know what my school would be, other than, you know, I graduated from Uniota. I'm not like you guys, teacher in this area, but I, for the indoor sports and basketball mainly being what I've been around, I think Southeastern has a great place to watch a basketball game. The parking's, you know, good because it's right there by the gym, and when you go in there to watch a game like I do as an unbiased observer, a lot of times it's nice to be able to have plenty of room, maybe sit up top, kind of, you know, observe things. Piketon also, you know, I think Piketon and Southeastern have two great places to watch basketball. From a football standpoint, you know, I've only been recently to a few places. Obviously, you know, Uniota has great food, man, great concessions over there. And you got to understand, I'm going to choose my football place due to the food, I love me some concessions at halftime, you know what I mean? But they have the fish going out there I'd say, so football, I've only been to a couple places, but basketball, I like Piketon, I like Southeastern.
Well, obviously, with my home school being Paint Valley and kind of taking that out of the way, you know, when you're around a place every day, you do kind of fall in love with certain things about your school. And I think Paint Valley does maximize a lot of space and money for a small school. As I move around the SVC, Matt, I like what you're saying. Basketball wise, with Southeastern and Piketon, you know, Dina also has a nice gym. I think they have a little small seating on the visitor side would maybe be my one knock there. As I move outside, the Uniota outdoor facility is beautiful. There's no doubting that. But Jeremy, you make a great point about Southeastern because it is new. It is kind of well thought out with parking and accessibility and some different things there. So really, I think what's neat about the SVC for the most part, and I think there's a couple schools that'll still follow, for the most part, all of our schools have done a pretty good job of entering the next generation, if you will. As you look through the 70s and 80s and you talk to some of the older SVC people, things started to maybe get outdated there in a little bit of the 90s. And I think for the most part, more schools than not have done a great job of improving facilities. So, you know, great email. Something, obviously, fans, you're out and about all over the SVC. Let us know, 740-569-3254. I want to thank our sponsors again this week with Valero and Dr. Chris Good and Adena Sports Medicine. We'll have stats up and going throughout the various sports here in the upcoming week and hopefully weekly throughout the rest of the fall. So on that note, until next time, for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and the wonderful people at DBK Media Service, and for Matt Combs and Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC. 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.